Non-duality is full of paradoxes. And it begins with the very first paradox, which is that we are using two to explain one. The word non-duality is a breakup of two words, no duality. You see, it is very difficult to explain conceptually what this means, what here and now means. Because here does not refer to a location, and now is not a reference to time. But the problem is that human mind is trained to think in terms of linear time, and it imagines space, so everything is based on imagination. And therefore, it's difficult to conceptualize this. But once this is known, literally everything gets known. And what I mean by that is that our existential crisis, the intensity of it begins to drop. It actually finishes, because all of these life questions, questions regarding relationships, regarding the hardships of life, they are based around the subjectification, the entityfication, which is the me. So all whatever we are, you know, all whatever we plan is always for the betterment of this entity here. We always seek betterment, and we always think it of as a function in time, in a future. So what I do is I create an image of myself, and then I project an image into the future. And both of these images, they are one and the same. And the separation between the two images becomes my life story. It is the measure. I am this. I don't like this. I want to be that. And I think that once I am that, then my sufferings will drop. Then all my problems will be solved. All my relationships will become harmonious. All my financial troubles will go away. But life more or less remains the same. The conditioned character more or less remains the same. Yes, few things change. But there are many things that do not change as well. From what I have observed is that there is a shift in perception with the non-dual understanding. And in that shift, things are seen for what they are. In the sense that there is no anxiety, and there is no urgency to change what is being seen. So there is a sense of acceptance of what is. And that includes the feelings and sensations that one is experiencing within. So there is no idea of creating another image or projecting an image in the future, because image by nature is a changing entity. This me is an image. It is a changing entity. no matter what modification I do to this image, the image remains an image. And the awareness of this process can only be seen directly. It cannot be seen through the image. Again, it is very hard to explain this conceptually. And usually what happens is that when the awareness seizes us, which is called spiritual awakening or insight or whatever you want to call it, then there is no solidity to things. When I say things, I include everything, from physical objects to mental formations. Formations like thoughts, feelings, sensations. They are experienced in full intensity. It is not that the intensity is reduced. On the contrary, one becomes more sensitive to what is. So, everything is experienced in full intensity, but they lose their stickiness. The sensation does not continue as thinking. And as this urgency to end the sensation or to modify it, it is simply experienced. And subsequently, it gets released from the system. But when this understanding is not there, what usually happens is that we live with the image that there is a self here, a central agency, which is in control and command of everything. And therefore, I must be a better person. I must do this. I must do that. I must change myself. I must change others. I must change the world. I must make it a better place. We should always be peaceful. Our relationships should always be in harmony. All these ideas begin to spring up in this. But they're all filtered through this self or through this sense of central agency. Therefore, any idea that comes from the self, that is filtered through the self, is a limited idea. It is a thought, and thought by nature is divisive. Thought is never complete. Awareness, on the other hand, is complete. Now, sometimes what happens is that we try to mix concepts. And I have seen a lot of people mixing religious concepts with the non-dual teachings. I don't know if I can call it a teaching also. I don't feel this is a teaching because it is not pointing to anything in particular. It is just pointing to this. And this has no dimension. It has no substance. But it is all there is. So anything which is limited, like a thought, it cannot fully explain fullness. The only way to know fullness is to be knowing itself. And the best and the closest word that comes in my mind at this time is unconditional love. The unconditional love is acceptance of what is. So, it is acceptance of the totality of everything. all-encompassing. Now, the peace that I refer to in my videos is not the peace of the individual, because the individual cannot do anything to acquire peace. The peace is the substratum. Therefore, it is not to be acquired. It is a realization, and it is not a personal realization. The more effort you put to attain peace and to sustain peace, the more trouble mind creates, because then mind again has created an image. So what usually happens is that we create image, we live with our own image. The notion of me is an image. And then we go through life's conditioning. This image goes through modifications, through life's conditioning. So in that, sometimes there are traumas, childhood traumas, which results in an individual which has, you know, which lives with that image, continuously that image, under the influence of that. And the behavior seems to determine what is right and what is wrong. But again, that is all part of the society's conditioning, what is right and what is wrong. And the entire image is based on that. So consciously or subconsciously, all our movement is towards that idea of right and wrong. So the image asks that maybe if I know more about non-duality, maybe if I learn this concept, maybe if I mix what the traditional teaching says with the modern concept, and if I know more about philosophy and psychology, then maybe I will become better. Maybe I will become, my relationships will be sorted. There will be harmony. Now that again is the image modifying itself to become a new image. But the image, the existence of image itself is suffering, is pain. So the paradox is that while you are on the journey to discover peace, to discover the non-dual awareness, you cannot do anything to see that, because it is the awareness, the source, that decides. It is not the individual that is in control or in charge of that. The individual comes up with tricks and tips. It says, let me study more scriptures. Let me read this book, that book. Let me listen to this teacher, that teacher. Then maybe something wonderful will happen. Again, it is all a movement towards that projection that one has created. It is the extension of the same image. But in the light of non-dual awareness, this entire play of images is seen. And it is not seen by the individual. That is an impersonal seeing. That's the best word I can use. Yes, a lot of things change with that. But it is not that the person becomes benevolent or that the person becomes good in any sense. The conditioning still remains. The challenges still remains. But the solidity of what is happening out there, this division between myself and the world, that begins to dissolve. And that is the end of, that is the beginning of end of the illusion. at some point, this completely dissolves. And the individual is not in control of when and how it dissolves. The more concern with trying to dissolve it with a technique, with a practice like meditation, yoga, pranayama, all beneficial, very beneficial. But you know, it is like this one non-duality teacher, I think Tony Parsons, yeah, he said that it is like making the prison comfortable. The prison simply remains the prison. Yes, it can be made comfortable through all practices, through all tips and tricks and techniques. And I encourage people, I say, okay, do whatever helps you in life. But at the end of the day, it is just your story. It is the character's story. The character is a divine puppet. A biological organism, which is simply doing what it's designed to do. So when you ask me a question, it is just that you are asking a question and you are getting a response from my side. It is not that there is some intelligent entity, self sitting here, which is being blessed by God. And that is responding. It is the play of the same consciousness. So Yuji Krishnamurti described this in this manner. It says that your questions are like throwing a ball against the wall. So you are just throwing the ball on the wall and the ball just bounces back off. And that is what is happening in all these non-duality satsangs. Now it will continue till that is destined for you. Till that is destined for the character. Because it is a part of the character's story. All the answers are absolutely meaningless. Because all the questions are irrelevant. They all come from the divided mind, from the fragmented mind, and mind itself is an illusion. Therefore, illusion creates further illusion. Illusory questions get illusory answers. The illusory entity feels satisfied. Okay, I've got my answer, I'm happy. It continues like that for some time. But then something happens, the separate self gets triggered, and then it says, oh, now I'm back again. Isn't that our story? Isn't that what is happening with the character? But are you the character? Because character is not your continuous experience. If you see in your daily living, it is very easy to see this. The character is not your continuous experience. Only when you think that you are, that is the time you exist. But there are gaps. So if the character was the truth, there couldn't have been gaps. And the biggest example is deep sleep. There is no you in deep sleep. But when you wake up, when the character wakes up, it says that I slept. That means that there is an awareness that is common to both deep sleep and waking states. Similarly, the experience of stillness restfulness is also the states of mind. And mind can certainly be trained to relax through different practices, different techniques. But again, you know, as it is said that life is a imprisonment. Whatever we do gives us relief in bits and pieces. But till the image is there, the suffering is there. And till we are alive, the character remains alive. And suffering remains a part of the character. But again, the thing is, with the experience of the non-dual awareness, I'm calling it an experience. I don't know if it is an experience or not, because for experience requires the subject. But with that knowing, this whole suffering, the idea of an individual suffering, the solidity of it goes away. It's not all that solid. While you see that you are suffering and you are exhibiting certain traits which you have classified according to what has been your conditioning, what you have learned. You say this behavior is healthy, that behavior is unhealthy. I should be doing this, I should not be doing this. Things should unfold in this manner, things should not unfold in that manner. Life should be like this, life should not be like that. My life is more important, others' life is insignificant. You see, this is the distinction that minds create. The mind will create fuss over being a vegan, but when it comes to popping a mosquito, no, that creature deserves to die. I don't say what is right, what is wrong. It is your individual choice. What the character does is a part of the character's story. We are not looking at this from that lens. We are simply examining what is happening here. And then, you know, another question comes up that if this cannot be known, if nothing can be done about this, then why are you talking about this? And my answer is that that is the part of this character's story, the story of Jagjot. Jagjot has been designed to do that. So Jagjot is doing that. You are throwing a ball of questions, and as a reaction, I am answering that. It is not that I am concerned with your peace. It is not that I am concerned with your happiness. I have no concern for that. It is simply that all of this is a happening in which the consciousness pretends to be you as the questioner, as the seeker, and the same consciousness the same consciousness is me as Jagjot trying to answer the question. Now, the traditional structures that are created around spirituality, where guru and disciple dynamic is set up, where the disciple is assumed to be ignorant and guru is assumed to be all-wise, all-knowing, all-wonderful, all-loving, blah, blah. That is, again, it is coming from your own mind. It is the same limited consciousness, identified consciousness, that has reduced itself further in the role of a disciple. And on the other hand, again, the same identified consciousness has identified itself as superior in the role of a guru. Now the guru says that I will show you God. I will give you the attainment. You are there to realize God And the guru promises you that. He says, oh, I will give you God. But what happens subsequently that you start seeing God in guru? And then you do all those things, all those meaningless things. Then you set up guru as your I don't know the word to use, but you see guru as the ultimate authority. You forget your original goal, which was God realization. God, which is an idea in your mind. You get so invested in the guru. You think that the guru will liberate you, but the individual, no matter how charismatic, how realized he seems, has no power, no influence. Guru cannot show you the truth. There is an inner principle within you that itself will lead you to the truth. And Ramana Maharishi said that that is the I principle within you. And it is not that you are in control of that. It is the awareness, the source that chooses. Source begins the seeking and source only ends the seeking. And there is this thing called insight. Or some people call it spiritual awakening. Whatever you want to call it is immaterial. But the thing is that there is a clear seeing, direct perception for the first time, where things are seen for what they are, where the reality is seen in everything as this, here and now. But that is not an event. That is not a function of time. It is available. This is available. Here and now it is available. So, it is simply that something happens and the character sees a glimpse of that. Now again, you know, it's difficult to put this experience into words. But that seeing is enough. That is it. There is nothing beyond that. But what happens afterwards is that the character again comes back. Because we have to live in this world. So the character is needed. That is why the nature has given that. The character is the result of the brain fluids. So the character comes back and the character for the first time has had a glimpse into something, into its own absence, and now it wants that again. It wants to experience that state again because nothing compares to that. It feels like ultimate liberation, ultimate freedom. But you see, the character is completely powerless. No guru can lead you to that. It is only the source which decides. The non-dual awareness is the source. And the more effort you try to put to be back into that state, the more life becomes complicated, the more painful it is. But you see, that reality is never apart from you. That reality is simply this here and now. Now, in some traditions, what happens is that they say that, like, for example, Ramesh Balsekar would say that there is an event called awakening. I'm using event in a loose, relatively speaking, term here. Because, you know, we have to use words to describe it. So I'm calling it an event, but it is not an event. So let's say an event happens of spiritual awakening, and then he talks about deliverance, that slowly, slowly that information gets absorbed in the being, and that brings about a change in different aspects of the character's personalities. But you see that deliverance is a part of duality. It is not non-dual. Deliverance is a part of character's story. So again, it is a bit of an illusion, because it is not that everyone will be 100% delivered. I don't know if there is a better word to use. For some people will continue to behave in one pattern, and others will behave in different patterns. Now, this difference in patterns is based on our conditioning, on, you know, on what we have studied, on what we think in terms of morality, what we think in terms of right and wrong, our education. So it is just a concept. Deliverance is just a concept. But one change I have noticed is that the character's ability to relax increases with this awareness. Now again, your mind is imagining it that as an advantage. But it is not an advantage of any sorts, because the mind thinks dualistically. It thinks in terms of opposites. Mind wants to avoid pain. It wants to cling on to pleasure. So all the movement, all the study, all the philosophy, all the theories, they are all directed, you know, with this fundamental assumption that I have to avoid pain in my life and I have to bring pleasure to myself. But that itself creates more and more pain. What this message, this teaching says is that you are the non-dual awareness. And whether pain or pleasure, that is a part of the character's story. That is a part of the image that is trying to modify itself to become, to unbecome. And that is why this suffering continues. There are lots of teachers, so-called gurus out there, who give this instruction that if you do this, your life will become better. And what happens is that for some people, they do experience a lot of relief, and they remain in proximities, close proximities of these gurus, and the guru sort of becomes like a parent figure for them. So like a parent, the guru, you know, takes care of the child, giving the validation and whatever the child desires, whatever the mind imagines. So mind is all about imagination, fanciful living. And that is what the guru entertains. So it's part of that whole entertainment system. But what happens is that after some time, the mind, being an image, starts seeing the guru in a different light. Because again, the pain comes back. Because at some point, even the guru gets tired. And then when guru's attention is focused somewhere else, the ego springs up from within, the ego of the disciple. And then the disciple wants a different guru. Then he says, oh, this guru was not nice. Let me go to the other guru. This non-duality teacher was not very nice. Now I'll go to that non-duality teacher and listen to their satsangs, and maybe I will improve. So you see, this play of consciousness keeps going on. There is a difference between living the character and living with the awareness. Living with the awareness of the character's living. These are two very different things. So in that, you know, you don't feel the need to change anything, to fit a particular structure, fit a particular belief. You live your life spontaneously. You keep your likes and dislikes. You meet the people you like. You read the books you like. You don't try to change your behaviors too much. You're not concerned with much of that. You simply allow things to be. So things are seen. And in that seeing, a lot of patterns get revealed. A lot about character gets known in that seeing. And that itself brings about a change. It is not that the individual is in control of this process. The whole idea of control creates suffering, because control implies subject-object relationship. Only the non-dual awareness or the source is in control. Again, it is just our mind imagining things like that. So things are simply happening. But nothing is happening to me. That is the recognition. And it does drop a lot of concepts. It destroys a lot of concepts. It drops a lot of burdens as well. It doesn't change the fundamental conditioning of the character, but it does bring relief. But not in the way the mind imagines, because mind has its own agenda. The mind is fixated with its own beliefs. So this is something I wanted to share with you. Thank you.